The Broken Arrow, a traditional bow hunting podcast with your host, Schaefer Magnet and Chris Seacole. Brought to you by Black Widow Bows, Safari Tough, Great Northern Quivers, Addictive Archery, and Laurel Mountain Outfitters.
I guess on that note, we'll start off the podcast. And for those who don't know, Chris wasn't there, you know, because he couldn't be, supposedly. But the two guys we have on tonight, Brad and Phil, plus myself, we're all at the PBS pig hunt. And Brad has a fun story. Phil was with him, and we wanted to get some people on from the hunt to recap the hunt. So that's what we're here to do tonight. So I guess, Brad and Phil, if you want to introduce yourselves, maybe give a quick background. Doesn't have to be anything crazy.
Yeah, I'm Phil Armfield from grew up in North Carolina. Didn't grow up hunting, but got into it in the early 80s. Pretty much got into bow hunting right away, shooting old SL50 Darden roller wheel bow with fingers. Didn't know, have no clue what I was doing. Stayed with compounds up till about, I don't know what, about 5 years ago, maybe?
Hadn't been that long. Probably three or four.
We've been but anyway, he had a, Brad had a, I think a Samick Sage, and he'd been shooting, and he said, "Hey man, you really ought to start." And I said, "Well, I got a PSE, take down recurve, we'll start shooting at some 55 pounds. I had no clue what it was going to be like. So I get that thing out. We start just busting. I mean, we just start slinging arrows. We just started throwing arrows, whatever we had, we were just shooting them. And I said, "Man, this is horrible." I said, there's no way I'm going to go through a 2-year learning curve to do this. But here we are. And I got a nice Matthews compound for sale if anybody's interested. It hadn't been out of case in 3 years.
So that is perfect.
Yeah,
but I don't think that thing will sell too well on here, but it's
a good effort. No, I don't think so. Anyway, that's who I am. Brad and I have been friends for, gosh,
about 10 years.
10, 12 years. So
all right. My name is Brad Pike. I grew up in North Carolina also, been hunting my entire life. My dad got me into hunting, more of a rifle hunter than a bow hunter, but my first bow was the Bear Whitetail 2 compound, which I had no clue. And I would just pick any arrow and shoot it and wonder why I couldn't hit anything I shot at. But had that for a few years, went into the compounds, and then I think I saw a copy of Traditional Bowhunter magazine in the bookstore and picked it up and started reading it, and it got me interested. And I kept looking around, finally ordered a Samick Sage. And then, you know, the whole fiasco, you think that a stick and string is going to be simple compared to a compound, but then it opens up a whole new world to you that it's not simple, but it's fun. And, had that bow for a while, then went on to other ones. And like Phil said, him and I go to church together, and I mentioned to him that I had the recurve, and we started shooting together. And since then, we went through many bows.
Yeah. Now we've got 7 at the house now. I've had as many as probably, I don't know, 8 or 9 at one time. But
That's not that long of a time period either, yeah. Phil.
No.
I love how quickly it escalates.
Yeah, I'm down to 3 now, but I've had a lot, probably more than Phil has. But
yeah,
don't worry, I don't think wives will be listening to this. We're okay,
right?
This is our safe space.
I met a guy named Chris at ETAR that talked me into buying a Black Widow this year last summer.
Sorry about that. But, was that a PMA or a PSA? I forget.
PSA.
All right.
With the black and white ebony limbs.
That was it. Yep.
Yep. Oh, so I sold my compound last year. I would always, you know, I'm just going to hunt with the stick bow this year. And then I would see a good deer on camera, and I'd go back to a compound. And even when I carried the compound, it just wasn't that much fun. So this year, last summer, I sold my compound.
It's funny how it loses that, like, you know what I mean? Also, when you make that switch, you can't go, you go back. If you do go back, you feel guilty about it, or you just don't have the fun factor is not there.
Yeah. Well, you know, like when I was trying to make the switch, I'd go out hunting. I'd take my compound and I'd take my recurve and I go, okay. And then, you know, you're always, when you get ready to walk in the woods, you always grab your compound because you're going, I might see a big one. And I want to be able to hit it. So, but then I'll tell you just the, when we got more interested in shooting regularly and we found a club near the house, to join that would do, they do about 6 3D shoots a month and, a year. I'm sorry.
Oh,
six 3D shoots a year.
Six a month.
Yeah.
But, dang, I'm moving.
Right. Yeah. But, that really kind of turned it for me. And then once I got a pretty decent, you know, bow that was really consistent, we started going to, we went up to Virginia a couple of times to a club, Sherwood. We shot there. We were planning a trip to South Dakota to turkey hunt. And some things kind of fell through and didn't look like it was going to get to go. So that spring, that'd have been 4 years ago. This is our fourth year at ETAR.
Yep.
So I called Brad one day and I said, hey, what do you think about this idea? If that didn't work out, I said, let's go to ETAR. So we've talked about it for 2 years. I said, let's just do it. Cause we'd always, you know, you see stuff on YouTube and stuff. You go, man, that looks neat. And they were still having it. Denton Hill. Well, first year we went is the year that the Denton Hill thing was up in the air and they didn't know where they're going to have it.
Gotcha.
So we never got to go to Denton Hill, but
did you guys go to the ski tar one?
We went there and that, man, I'm going to tell you what, that just put it in. I mean, that just stuck it in deeper. You know what I mean? It's just like,
yeah,
it came embedded in you when you,
what year was that? Was that 2020? Was that like the ski tar thing?
That would have been, this is 24. It would have been, I guess, 21. No,
21.
21.
Yeah. Okay. So the first year it was kind of back to normal.
The first year because they had I think it was 2020. So, so Denton Hill is a state park. It's owned by the state of Pennsylvania. And they had the regulations, the communist stuff. And basically I think the people kind of said, well, we're going to do it anyway, but we'll do it at our ski resort. And they had it in 2020 and there was maybe like, I don't know, 300 people there. Maybe it was awesome. There's nobody there. There's groups, you know, everybody kind of just hung out and everything, but it was so low key. It was just fun. There was barely anybody there. Yeah. It was a good time. Yeah. But yeah. Then the next year kind of they moved it officially, but yeah, that was fun.
Around every year since then.
Oh yeah. It's got way bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say it's back to normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Never knew there were so many crazy people out there, did you?
Oh, crazy people that get along with.
I was thinking the other day, and I was talking to my brother, who's hunts with me a lot also, but he's still hooked on the compound thing, so I won't tell you what his name is. But but anyway, he's always been in law enforcement, and, you know, his – most recently, he's been with a city fire department for like 17 years or something like that. And he always talks to me about the brotherhood that all those guys share, you know, and how tight-knit they all are. And, man, I found the traditional community to be so much like that. I mean, it doesn't matter where you go and meet a bunch of guys that shoot traditional, and it's just like you click. I don't know. And Brad and I were talking about it. Even in other shooting sports, I've never been exposed to that with any other kind of shooting sport with that kind of camaraderie and stuff and that kind of family and that kind of connection. This is awesome.
You know what? I think it comes down to the lack of competitiveness.
Exactly.
I think people just want to go and shoot their bows. They don't care if they hit, as long as they hit the target, they're psyched. Even if they don't hit it, they don't care. I think it just comes down to there's zero competition when it comes to traditional archery. There's some guys out there that are competitive, but if we go to shoot and somebody wants to keep score, everybody's like,
yeah. What? Michael, at the end of the day, I sucked less today.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, I'm sure we're all competitive against ourselves. We want to shoot better than we did yesterday, but yeah, I think that's what does it, man. That's the best part.
Yeah, it is. I'm telling you.
So Phil, that type of stuff, that's a good lead into like the PBS, because that's basically what the whole thing wraps around almost. Right. So I was curious what got you guys into the PBS and how you ended up in, well, looking into this pig hunt, which was obviously PBS oriented. So how did that whole thing transpire for the two of you?
I'll let Brad tell you how he got into it first, because I joined after he did.
Okay.
I think once again, I was reading Traditional Bowhunter magazine and I saw the advertisement for the PBS, and then ended up Googling it. And I went on there and saw that they had the group hunts you could go on. And I thought that was pretty cool, because you're hunting with people that have all this experience, but you're not having to pay, you know, to get the use of that experience and learn things. And I went on I joined, and then I think we went to Sherwood. And the PBS was there, went at the star shoot that year in Virginia. But I met a guy named Rob Burnham that was there. And he did a hunt in Cold Mountain up in Virginia. I'm sorry, Rough Mountain up in Virginia. And I went on it. I didn't know anybody. I talked to Rob before. And I went up there and camped in the National Forest for 5 days with like probably 10 strangers. And before I left, you know, I had an invitation to hunt Virginia. I had an invitation to hunt Utah. I had friends in Indiana, and it just blew me away that the community that they had in that group. Yeah. And that hooked me. And once that happened, I got Phil to join. And
yeah, he called. I think I actually had joined like the in that spring right before we went to Sherwood. Think. And I'm kind of like, okay, he joined. And I said, okay, yeah, I'll join. Get a free magazine. Couldn't hurt. It ain't that expensive. And so I start reading up on him. Then he comes back from that Rough Mountain hunt and is talking about the 5 days of the camping, and all that stuff. And I said, man, I am in.
And I never saw a deer that week. Right. It was a great hunt with good people, and I had a blast, and I wanted to do it again.
Yeah.
But it was a bad year. Acorns was real scattered, and then we started figuring it out toward the end of the week. And I think there was a couple misses, but I don't think anybody got a deer that week. But it was just
– sounds very familiar.
Yeah. But it was a good experience, and it was some of the most fun that I've had hunting. Yeah. Rob put on a really good hunt, and it got me hooked after that. I'll be a PBS member from the rest of my life.
But so he, I think we were, well, one thing he was talking about all these hunts you could go on. And, I've been self-employed for like since 97, and I just recently retired. And being self-employed, I couldn't get a lot of time off, because, you know, if I didn't work, the money wasn't coming in. So
exactly.
But I'm just recently retired, so I basically can take off and go and do anything I want. I'm still kind of working like 3 days a week.
Sounds awful.
Yeah, it is. It's horrible. I mean, I'm off like till Tuesday next week after I get through with you guys tonight. So, I mean, you know, you can feel sorry for it if you want to. But anyway, he comes up and he says, you know what? They're going to do a pig hunt down in Georgia. I said, I'm in. So, but the thing was, neither one of us had any idea as what to expect. He did have an idea of what the PBS hunt would be like. But so I had no idea on either setting what the PBS hunt would be like or what the pig hunt was going to be like down there. So we're back and forth. He's emailing, talking to Mark Poirier about different things, about like, you know, what do we need to take? What do we need to do? And, you know, Mark's just like, you know, a lot of guys bring snake boots. A lot of guys bring waders, so I didn't have either. So I'm out buying snake boots and waders. And I'm out, I brought, our truck was so packed. We brought
the house
here. Yeah, right. We brought our house. That's right.
One of my next questions was going to be on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being way overpacked. Where were you on that scale? Because I was at like a 9.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. We were 8 to 9. I told him, I said, well, I learned a lot of things this weekend. One was, next time we can bring your truck. Because mine was a full-size truck with a camper shell on it. He didn't have a camper shell. I said, you know what? I think I can throw everything I need next time behind the back seat.
You forgot one of the most important parts, Phil.
What's
two-wheel
that?
Drive.
Oh, yeah. Two-wheel drive. Nobody told me. That was the other thing.
That would have been good if Mark would have said, bring a four-wheel drive.
Make sure. Yeah. There's a lot of snakes down here, but if you can get to them, you better bring four-wheel drive.
Yeah. The tank trails are going
to
get you.
So we were kind of limited to the areas we could hunt. We tried to get down a couple of them, but I was ready to go for it. Brad was like, I don't know. I think we're gonna get stuck.
We had to back out a half a mile down one road.
He kept ragging me because I kept saying, I've never been stuck in this truck. It's got positive traction. I've never been stuck. He said, well, this is gonna be the first time. Yeah. Pretty rough down there, some of those roads. Because some of you guys with four-wheel drive even had some trouble, didn't you?
I was about to say there was that, and then there's the factor in the back of your head going, I gotta make a 22-hour drive trip home. In this vehicle.
Right. Yeah.
You can't go Baja-ing down the tank trail. Yeah. Oh.
That's all right. Man.
Any questions, Chris?
It's funny because Schaefer and I had this conversation earlier today. We were talking. He's like, man, I didn't need half the crap I brought.
Just the amount of clothes that I took, it was ridiculous. I don't know what I was thinking.
I wore the same pair of pants every day. If anybody's going on this pig hunt in the future, pair of quick drying pants, Brad. Yeah. You'll hear why that's important.
Right.
And I would say twice the amount of socks as there is days.
Yep. Yeah.
Because if your feet get wet, just changing your socks is a life changer.
So what's you guys brought your house down with you? What's one thing you wish you had that you didn't have with you?
Wow.
I would have personally bought snake boots versus snake gaiters.
Yeah.
Like like rubber boots, but like a pair of hiking,
like the full lace snake boots.
Yeah, that is the thing. I bought a pair of rubber snake boots.
Yeah,
and they were real comfortable at the house, but
not
like
working.
Sunday before we left, we walked 7 miles.
Yeah,
and the rubber in those things is so stiff. You know, it doesn't give to your walking style. It just gives wherever it gives. So they're not the rubber snake boots. I definitely next year I'll have a pair of lace-up leather boots because they'll be a little bit hotter, but they'll be way more comfortable.
All right. How did you guys see snakes?
Oh yeah,
we're did talking really? To the right set of.
Oh, this is going to be good.
The visuals.
All right. Cool.
I'll send you the photo, Chris.
All right. All right.
Send him the photo so he can have an idea what.
Is that going to weave into this story?
Eventually.
That's the beginning of this story, really.
All right.
Funny thing is the picture I'm sending you, Brad sends me while I'm down there. And that morning it was like 55. So I didn't even have my snake gaiters on thinking, you know, hey, people say it's not till like 70, right? I get that picture. I can tell you I was in the truck. Those suckers got buckled on within like two minutes. All right. Clearly this is an issue today.
That's a blackface too. Yeah.
I have no idea what it is.
I think you said it was a canebrake rattler.
Was he mainly black?
No,
just the bottom half. It was, I counted because I went out to where the river was flooded.
There's a lot of rings on that.
Yeah, I counted between 15 and 18, I think.
What's that, like 6 or 8 inches long?
I don't know. I'd have to look at it again. It was big.
The snake probably.
He never moved. I don't know if it had just eaten something or what, but it just laid there beside because I was standing there. I looked to my right. The snake was laying there.
My favorite part is everybody goes to. Did you poke it?
That rattle looks like if you grabbed around it, it would stick out on both sides of your fist.
Oh, it's long. It was. I didn't. This when I caught back up. The Brad snake was still laying there. I didn't know it was still laying there.
Holy
I didn't even go over there to look at it because we were separated. We had kind of went into two different areas. My phone vibrates in my pocket, and I take it out thinking he's going to go, no pigs in here, come on, let's go. And I flip up and see the picture of that snake, and I'm going, I'm standing in a big palmetto thicket, and all of a sudden now I'm starting to look to see what's around me.
I can, after that photo, a lot of small pine cones turned into snake rattles.
Okay, yeah. That thing goes from like 2 inches of girth to like 8 inches of girth, like right out of the gate. I mean, like,
and it, if you zoom
diameter,
in on the,
I should say,
if you zoom in on the photo, I mean, up top you can see where it's kind of like coiled around. I mean, that's a
yeah. It looks like it just ate a cat or something. Holy crap! Is that thing bloated?
Yeah.
Wow! Look at it coiled around. Oh my goodness.
I had my snake boots on then, but earlier that day I had been stomping around everywhere because Phil had even said, he said, you act like you don't think there's, you're not worried about snakes. And I was like, ah, like Schaefer said, it's 50 some degrees. There's no snakes out.
But wow.
Once I saw that, I was paying attention after that.
So was that, that was day two, right? If
it's,
I remember correct.
Saturday. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, because we met briefly at camp on probably Thursday night, Brad.
Yeah, when y'all first came in.
Yeah, so it was funny. So, Phil, I think you were hunting the food plot the first night.
I did. Yeah.
And my dad and I were coming out of one of the zones, and we just happened to drive by Brad, and, you know, 20 minutes later, you know, instead of hunting, we were talking in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Right in a zone. And I remember you going, Brad saying, I just want to see a pig so I can go back to work and at least say I saw something.
Yeah.
Ugh. So that all was right. How the first night ended.
So you guys all kind of rolled in what, on Thursday?
For the most part.
Yeah. Some on Friday.
Did you guys get to hunt Thursday or no?
I did.
We left here like Thursday morning about 8 o'clock.
How far of a drive?
That's 5.5 hours.
Oh, that's not terrible.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. We're not quite the warriors that Fred and Schaefer are.
So shout out to Stuart, though, because Stuart drove down for the Georgia traditional bow hunters hunt there.
Right.
And he lives in Ontario, Canada.
I know.
Oh, wow.
And a week and a half later, he drove back down to the
right.
PBS hunt. Absolutely. And he had, I think our drive was 1150 or, you know, 1150 miles, and his was 1350. So, man, that guy is a trooper.
Yeah.
So, if you're listening, Stu, props to you.
But it was, I mean, there were several people there, was it?
Emra was from Minnesota.
Minnesota, Ontario, Pennsylvania. There were a lot of people there.
Yeah, and I didn't get to see him before he left. I think I was in the bathhouse. But congratulations to him. I'm glad coming drove from Minnesota down there and he got a pig. So,
he got a nice
yeah.
one.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, he had his drive just kept getting worse too. He's like, I'm gonna leave after work, so
right,
I texted
yeah.
him the next morning. Where are you? He's like, I just barely left.
Oh, the weather got really nasty right
yeah.
before we got ready to leave.
Emmer's drive just kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse. I'm like, oh, that's brutal.
Minnesota's tough.
Yeah. Ours wasn't too bad because we stopped at Cracker Barrel on the way down. So, you know, that made the trip worth it right there.
Yeah, that makes for an easy
Chris
day.
Doesn't get it, and you guys probably don't either, but we don't have Cracker Barrels up here. So
you can't throw a rock here without hitting a Cracker Barrel.
No.
Yeah, same in Pennsylvania. It's awesome.
Right.
It's my favorite breakfast. I love it. Those biscuits are amazing. All right, so you guys rolled in. You got to hunt a little bit Thursday. When did how many people are in camp altogether, I guess? 10?
I know. I counted 16 at the most.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. So
it was a pretty good showing.
Yeah.
This was, I mean, I want to say this was basically my first PBS hunt. Technically, the bear hunt I went on was through PBS in a way, but I knew everybody going there, and it was kind of pre-planned, so it was
right
PBS-ish. So
Chris
it was
didn't go on that one either.
What was that?
I did not.
No,
Chris didn't go on that one either.
No, we might
thanks
have.
For,
a broken,
thanks for reminding me.
We might start a broken arrow bet here. How long it takes Chris to hunt out of Pennsylvania?
I've never hunted out of state ever.
No.
Do you actually hunt?
Everybody just send us a message on Instagram.
No,
your expected time frame of Chris's first out of
state. What part of PA?
I'm north of Scranton.
Okay.
So
yeah,
your guys' drive to the pig hunt gets me to his place.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like 45 minutes from the New York border, like from Binghamton.
Yeah. How far are you from Etar then?
2 hours.
2 hours.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. It's like 9 for us.
But yeah.
It's worth every minute.
That's a nice area out there.
Yeah.
Anywhere from like the Towanda area out Bradford County, was it Tioga, Potter, all those counties are beautiful. That part of Pennsylvania is gorgeous. Yeah.
We were talking about that every time we've been, we just love just riding through the countryside. It's just beautiful. Oh, yeah.
Those hills, those rolling hills. It's just so cool. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm in a good area. I'm in the middle of the woods. It's nice. It's similar to that, but not as much farm country as there is out there. Like there's a lot of farms out there, not so much here.
It's more wooded there where you're at.
No, not yet. There's actually there's a guy that lives about 3 miles from my house who raises, I think they're called razorbacks.
Yeah.
And he sells them to outfitters. But that's the only pigs I know of around here, other than farm pigs, you know.
So I got a little history of that whole place down there at Fort Stewart that was kind of interesting. I'll share a little bit about it. So Brad and I were walking back one evening back to the truck, and we meet this guy driving out on one of the roads, and he stops in the road, and he doesn't look like he's a hunter. Definitely was not with our group. He gets out of the truck and he asks us, he says, "Is that you guys parked back there by the graveyard?" Because we had parked next to an old graveyard. And we said, "Yeah." He said, "You didn't go in the graveyard, did you?" And we said, "No." I said, "We went across the street." Well, he starts telling us he is one of the last living descendants of all the families from that area. I mean,
no kidding.
Yeah. That place, that every place, Chef, you probably saw several graveyards.
Well, oh, yeah.
Every place there was a graveyard, there was like a township there.
Okay.
At one time. So he starts telling us all this history about this place and how that it was all connected to his family, all this land. We look it up. You have any idea how big that place is?
It's like 280,000 acres or something like that.
New York City's only 209,000 acres.
It's basically the same size as the county I live in within reason.
Massive.
We did on Onyx, I took from the western point to the eastern point to point, is 33 miles wide.
Yeah.
Place is huge.
What was there a reason he was concerned about you guys going in the graveyard?
Because he was just telling us, well, when we said no, we didn't go in there, because it's all gated. I mean, it's you could get in it, what locked. But he said, well, that's just a lot of my family in there.
Okay.
So I guess he was concerned about people, you know, maybe
not vandalizing in there or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. Going
in there. But we got to talk to this guy, and across there's the road that we were on the opposite side of the road. We had seen a lot of sign in there. And as a matter of fact, we were going to go back there that evening, but in there, which was really strange to us, there was this huge mound of dirt. It was probably 8 feet high, maybe, I don't know, what would you say, Brad, 15, 20 feet across at the base. And it wasn't real. So we asked that guy about that. He said, the old courthouse steps from the 1700s are still under that pile of dirt. He said, when they knocked the courthouse and everything down, they left the steps. And that right there is where the old courthouse was. But he was giving us all this history. It was just, it was incredible. Some of the stuff he was telling us about that place. But that place was bought in 1940, right at the beginning of World War II.
No way.
By the military or by the government. So,
and the only reason it's open to the public is because those two roads run through it.
Right. And I'm kind of thinking, we, you know, you hear about people starting to hog hunt somewhere because hogs are starting to become a problem. And I'm kind of thinking, yeah, they probably had hogs down here since the 60s or 70s. The guy told us, he said, no, those hogs have always been here. They were, he said, those hogs have populated this area from the hogs that were brought over here from Germany in the 1700s.
That makes sense.
Wow.
So pretty interesting, the history of that place.
That is cool. That is awesome. Different. 200 some thousand acres.
I mean, you would, we would decide to go to a certain zone. And what we were doing is we would take the coordinates of like the road we wanted to turn onto.
Yeah.
And just put it in like Apple Maps. So at least like if we were talking on the way there, we, you know, the GPS would say, hey, you're here.
Yeah.
And you, the campground's like in the middle, and you would enter in the coordinates and it'd be a 30 minute drive. And you weren't even going to like an outer edge.
Right. Wow.
It's crazy. Wow.
That is wild.
Yeah. Mark said, Mark Porner said you could drive, you could, because he was stationed there at Fort Stewart at one time. He said, yeah, you could drive for 2 hours and never leave the base.
Easily.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's just, and I'd say probably, what would you say, Schaefer? I bet 80% of that place is just all woods, swamps, and
yeah. I mean, like the very central aspect of it is either off limits or very army oriented. But once you get to the, any of the outer edge, I don't even want to, edge isn't the right term, but out of the core area,
right?
It's all open.
How big's the base there? Like, it is. It's army, obviously.
Yeah.
The base itself, It's hard to determine. You can look on a map and kind of tell. But like I said, I'll bet you that 75%, I'd say probably 30% is probably all that's used, like that has facilities in it.
Like gotcha. Yeah. And, like the town.
Yeah. The actual base where, but they utilize the whole, all of the land for training because there's tank roads that cut all these sections up into quadrants like Schaefer was talking about. And
I don't know about you guys, but I'd never seen a tank crossing sign before. That's new.
No, I hadn't either.
this might be a stupid question, but how'd you guys not run into them training?
So they you have to look at a map every day, and it shows you which areas are off limits.
Okay.
But like that doesn't mean you may go by them. Like we would be on a tank road and an army truck would pass us.
Okay.
Or there was one time we were driving down 144, which is like one of the main public roads that go through the base.
Yeah.
And we hit a tank crossing. I mean,
oh, that's cool.
So it's just, it's definitely a different environment. That's for sure.
Oh, that is cool.
But it's a cool one.
You have to check that map, and then you have to go on the website and you have to sign in. And like, if you're going to area B3, you have to check into that area.
Yeah, Mark was telling us about
that.
You
have to check out.
Yeah.
So yeah.
If you don't check out by 9:30 at night, if you forget, you get a 7-day ban, no excuses.
No way.
They're pretty serious.
I guess if you don't check out by 9, they come looking for you.
Yeah.
Huh.
You know, service is good enough.
What is it through an app? Or through a website?
You can tell the website itself is as basic as it can be, so you can have very little service and it still functions.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's cool.
So that's how that all works.
I guess we need to get into some hunting.
Absolutely. So this is where we'll let you guys take over. I don't care if you started day one right at the fun part.
Tell me how like you guys rolled into town and you're in the camp and you meet 16 people and they're probably 16 of the awesomest people you've ever met, most likely, because that's kind of how the PBS rolls.
Right.
Run me through it. Let's hear it.
Well, it was just kind of, we had no idea. And even the first day we went out, we were like, Brad's like got my phone up, his phone up. He's looking at three different maps. He's trying to figure out, because it's pretty confusing the first time you're out trying to figure out, because you can't see everything at one place. You can't see what areas are open and look at the map at the same time and follow the GPS map at the same time. So you're switching back and forth and there's a little bit of delay. But so basically we talked to Mark Pointer was kind of really giving everybody a little bit of advice on some of the areas that he's killed or seen pigs and what would be good. And he shared with us, Schaefer mentioned the food plot. He shared with us this food plot. Actually, you could walk from the campground about, well, you walked it. How far was it? 0.7 miles?
With the detour, yeah.
It was rough. I didn't make it because I hit swamp and it got really bad. So I cut around and I probably walked 2 or 3 miles because I had to walk all the road around.
But you could get there. He was telling us, you know, you can drive to where this food plot was. And, you know, when you think food plot, I have one idea of food plot, but I think what it was, there was a field there that half of it looked like it'd been sown in winter wheat. And he was saying, well, you know, we're like, that's the most sign of anything I've seen yet in here, because Mark, I think, had come down at lunch on Thursday and hunted Thursday evening. So it's about that food plot was a field probably, I'd say 10 acres, maybe something like that. So we went and looked at it, and sure enough, I mean, you couldn't walk across the field without stepping in a pig track or, pig poop, or it was just, it and rooting and just, it was just
tore up.
You tore up. So I decided I swear I was going to hunt that evening, not knowing anything about pig hunting or, you know, kind of referencing what I knew about deer hunting and everything, figuring, you know, well, they're going to come out to the food plot in the evening, but it doesn't quite work that way. So I set up on the backside of the food plot. There's a really big thicket behind me. I mean, you could absolutely not walk through it. And Brad, is that the evening that you cut through from the campground?
That was a failed attempt to go through the swamp.
Yeah, it was a failed attempt to go through the swamp.
That's where he spent most of the evening talking with us.
Right. Right. Yeah. I finally broke out into the free area, and there y'all were.
Yeah.
Looking at an alligator.
Right. He takes off on foot and I drive around. I take my thermosail and stuff, and I got a little chair, and I'm sitting behind this pine tree with this mulberry bush thing in front of me. Just about dark, he texts me about 30 minutes before dark and said, because he told me, I said, are you going to meet up with me? You want to ride back? He said, nah, I'll walk back. Well, he texts me about 6 o'clock, says, I'm going to ride back with you. I'm on the road behind the truck. And I said, okay. So I'm sitting there and I hear something behind me, and I'm thinking I hear something behind me. And I'm sitting there and I hear a distinctive grunt, just one. And I'm going, okay, that definitely sounded like a pig grunt. And then I hear it again. It sounds like it's about 30 yards behind me. But the wind, that's the night before that was supposed to, the next day was supposed to rain. So, you know, the wind was blowing in. It changed direction, was blowing in my face. It was blowing my scent right back, because Mark told me that was probably, I probably did hear a pig, but it had probably winded me. So, but I didn't see anything that night, but I chalked it up to, I heard one. So, but it didn't actually see one. I was convinced I heard one.
So this is a stupid assumption, I guess, but like they're playing the wind.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh yeah.
They have really good noses.
Wow. Yeah. Man, that was something that didn't even enter my mind, because I'm thinking domesticated pigs and stuff like that. But yeah.
No.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, that's one thing that, stuff that I've read and been told, that you really have to play the wind with them, because they can pick you up from a good ways away.
Well, that's good to know. Okay.
So
we hunted Thursday evening on that food plot, and then Friday we spent some more time on the food plot and then just started walking that area. And there was a lot of pig sign. You could tell the pigs had been there between Thursday evening and Friday morning, but they were gone at that point. So then Friday we did some driving around, but no luck on Friday. And then we went into Saturday. For Saturday, I kind of looked online, and you can go on their website and look and see like the records for how many pigs were killed in each unit for the past 2 years.
Oh, that's cool.
So I went on there and found some units that had like a high pig kill.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, let's start there. And that's when we went to the unit, had a little airstrip there, and went behind it.
B1, wasn't it?
Don't tell everybody. I think it was B.
Dang it, Phil. Now I got to go beat that out.
We went there, and we were looking at it. Also, the river was really flooded. What was the name of that river?
Canoochee.
Okay. It was extremely flooded, which had pushed out from the river, which means it had – our theory was maybe it's pushed the pigs closer to the fields and stuff like that. And we went in there and started looking around and we hit fresh sign at that spot. And we decided to go down to the right and check an area. We got in there and it was pretty thick with palmettos.
Yeah, it was like after you got off the field, it was just like a big long strip down through the woods where there was a lot of palmettos. And there was a pretty heavily used game trail that we were kind of staying on. That's where he ran into the snake, the first place where we were at.
Right. We went down in there and we jumped something. We didn't know what it was, but it tore out of there. And we knew it was either a deer or hopefully a pig. Well, it went to the left and Phil wanted to go to the right. And I
wanted to finish pushing out those palmettos thinking like deer hunt. You know, if there was one bedded in here, there's probably another one. So
I was more ready to go after the one that ran.
Whatever the noise was. Yeah,
you're right.
We kind of split up. And he goes to the right, and then I went kind of straight ahead. But I went – that's where I saw the snake, ran across the snake and spent time Googling, can you kill a rattlesnake in Georgia? Things like that. Because I was thinking that would look really good on a bow. But it's a big no-no at Fort Stewart, so I did not do it.
Well, that's when I got back up with you, and you said – I said, no, you cannot kill them on Fort Stewart.
Yeah. Jeez, you could have backed two or three bows at that snake.
He said, are you sure? I said, look. Because you have to take this test when you're applying for your application for your permit.
Yeah.
He takes the test like two times or three times.
I don't know. I was taking it quick, trying to get it done.
So I come over to his house, you know, and I'm sitting there because I'm not real tech savvy. He'll pick on me a lot about that. But so I'm over here and he's showing me what to do. And I said, you might have to help me with some of these answers. He said, I'll just answer them best you can. Well, I aced the stinking thing. 100% correct. First time. He says, you're kidding me. I said, no. So I told him, I said, look, who made 100 on the test?
Right.
I said, I didn't kill it. Any kind of snake on the military.
It would have looked really good on a bow. But anyway, we split up. I texted him those pictures and he came back and we talked about the snake and he wanted to go farther back the direction that he had come from. So I said, okay, you go that way. I'll go to the left and try to, you know, just check that area. And we're probably 400 yards apart.
At least.
Something like that. So I went to the left and I was walking along the edge of the field and the river had pushed up. I think Mark had said it was actually, I mean, it was pushed way out of the banks, like maybe a mile wide at points because of all the flooding.
When you got to the water's edge where it had flooded into the woods and you could see, you know, like solid water out across, you were nowhere close to seeing the river. You could not
exactly
see the river. I mean, it was like he said, at some point, it had to be a mile outside of its banks.
Wow.
So I kept pushing or I kept walking down because the river was almost to the field. It was probably maybe 10 yards of palmetto bushes and trees and stuff. So I'll just push down this way. Well, I went down there and was almost to the end and almost had turned back because I was like, well, I'm just wasting time. I'm going to turn around. But then I decided to go a little bit farther. Well, then I heard that same noise again. It took off.
But it had actually flooded out about a quarter of an acre the end of that field, hadn't it?
Yeah. But I jumped it and I seen it this time because the pig had some like red on it. It was red and black and different colors. And I seen the red go through the bushes. So I got a little closer and the pigs, you know, like Phil said, we don't know what we're doing at this point. We're deer hunters.
Yeah.
So usually you spook a deer, good chance, you know, it's going to be gone out of sight. But the pigs a lot of times would just run maybe 50 yards and then stop again while I started getting closer and closer. Well, all of a sudden the pig just took off running. I guess he knew the gig was up. So it took off running. And Mark had said, you know, if you can chase these things and if you can run them to deep water, you can catch up with them. So I took off running. The pig's running in the edge of the woods with the river to the right. I'm running in the field beside it, trying to cut it off or catch up with it. Well, we come to the end of the field. We're running. I'm running through what? Probably 4-6 inches of water at that point.
That field had flooded. Yeah.
We come toward the end of the field and the river had went around in front of us. So the river went to the left, flooded at that point.
Now he's down there by himself. I'm still way up on the, I'm still 500 yards away at this point. So
the pig comes to the point to where it's going to have to either go in the water or turn left into me. So it takes a hard right and jumps into the water in the river and starts swimming away. Well, I was thinking, you know, it's flooded, so it's probably not that deep at this point. So I could, you know, if it was only knee deep, I could make up some time on the pig at this point. So the pig jumps into the river and is swimming away from me. And I remember the pig looked at me. It looked back over its shoulder and looked at me like, what are you doing? But I ran into the river and it got deep quick up to my chest. I pulled my bow back and it's probably, I don't even know if my limb was in the water or not. It's a good thing I didn't shoot, but I pulled my bow back and all I could see was the pig's head and maybe 4 inches of its back swimming away from me because the rest of it's underwater. Well, the pigs were going real slow and I thought about trying it and I was like, no, that's not a good shot. You know, I don't want to wound it and, you know, have it go off and not be able to find it. So I go start getting back out of the water, which I had forgot I had my wallet and my phone in my pants.
This is when I got a creative text message from him saying, now I've got a wet phone, boots, and wallet.
So I'm thinking maybe the pig will hook, because you can't see across the water. Like Phil said, we're not even looking at the river at this point. This is just flooding. And I think, well, maybe the pig's going to go to the left, hook back to dry land, and I can cut it off there. So I take off in the water to the left and to check that area out. Well, come to find out, it's all flooded, too. And I look to my right, and there's something in the water with me at that point. And I was like, at first impulse, I was like, is that another pig? Because I was going to go after it. Well, I looked to the right, and I was like, is that a gator? Because it was only 2 foot long, something black, 2 foot long, swimming kind of parallel to me. I look, it was an otter. So it was deep enough water, an otter swam by.
This is good. Mark wanted me to make sure you mentioned the otter.
Okay, there's the otter. Yeah. It swam by me.
He's out there thrashing after a pig. This otter's out there playing, doing rollovers and stuff in the water.
So I get back out of the water, and I get my phone out of my pocket, which is soaking wet now, and I try to call Phil, but my phone won't work unless it's on speakerphone at this point. So I call Phil, say, hey, I jumped one down here, come head this way. And the truck was kind of between us. So I walked back to the truck and dumped water out of my boots and I think I took my wallet out at that point. It's taking stuff out of my wallet and spreading it out so it would start drying. But, we decided to go down to the end of the field and push out a big section of palmettos because it looked, you know, good pig sign and stuff like that. So we go down there, but most of that was our, when we got in there, most of it was flooded. Yeah. So we knew the pig probably didn't make it that far. We kept looking around and got back closer to the truck. And I was like, well, I'm going to go down to where I last saw the pig one more time, where it jumped in the river and outswam me. And I'll walk back down there and get almost to the point where he had jumped and it took off through the bushes again. Well, at this point, Phil's probably 80 yards to my right, 75, 80 yards.
No, not to that point, because I had walked around where that field was flooded. We were probably about maybe 50 yards apart.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the pig took off toward him, and I hollered. I can't remember what I hollered. Something, pig coming at, hey, pig coming at you.
Incoming or something. I don't know.
But he, I'll let you tell that where it runs by you.
Yeah, so he... So I think that really surprised us because neither one of us expected for that pig to still be right there in that area. We really expected we would jump it up there beyond that point. So he yells and I start hearing, I'm standing, gosh, right at the edge of the field. I mean, and I hear the pig coming and it breaks out of a bunch of sage, a broom straw and stuff right in front of me, about 5 yards in front of me. And it's not really running. It's just kind of trotting. So I'm like, I come to full draw and shoot right behind it. And it just keeps trotting. So I take off running after it, and I'm trying to knock an arrow, and we're both going down the field, and it's just running. It'll look over at me and stop. I don't know if it was just exhausted. And so I ran down the field. I know 150 yards, didn't I? With that pig just trotting in the woods beside me, because the river, I mean, he couldn't go out into the water. He could turn back and went away. So I probably drew back on it four or five times because it would stop and I'd come to full draw. As soon as I would just about get to anchor, it would take off again. Well, it makes it all the way up. At one point, when I'm going around the end of this big oak tree out in the field, it doesn't come out in the clearing. It stops in this big palmetto patch. And I look over my right shoulder and Brad is sprinting up across the field by me about 40 yards out. He's trying to get ahead of both of us. So we just stood there for a minute and I could hear the pig in that palmetto, those palmettos. It was splashing around and it was grunting. And I motioned to him and told him that the pig was in those palmettos. And I motioned for him to go back around behind me and get on the other side of that palmetto thicket. So now we have this pig trapped in this palmetto thicket. It's probably 25, 30 yards wide. It's about 20 yards deep. And then the water in the river starts and we can hear it in there. It's grunting and it's moving and back and forth. I can hear it kind of come towards me, kind of go towards Brad. And we're a good 30 yards apart at that point. Army. Mm-hmm. A couple of times one time it came completely out of the palmetto thicket and was dead broadside. As soon as I pulled back, it spun around and went back in. So I'll let Brad finish telling the story, but I'll tell you what I saw from there. So I'm standing there and I'm getting up closer to that palmetto, bunch of palmettos, and I hear Brad's bow go, thump, and I see him run down backwards off of that big hump of palmetto stuff out towards the field like something was chasing him. Like he just had stepped in a hornet's nest or something. And he stops in the middle of the field, and I see him knock an arrow, and he creeps back up, and he gets up on that mound, and I see him draw back, and I see him shoot again. Well, at that point, I'm staying where I'm at because I'm thinking if he missed, that pig's coming back to me. I didn't want to go down there with him, then the pig scoot up from between both of us.
Right, right.
So at that point, I just stayed where I was. And then I didn't really know what was going on down at his. I could see him the whole time.
Right.
I'll go back to the part, the pig's going back and forth. And I could, like Phil said, I saw it. He goes to full draw probably two or three times. Yeah. And I was like, come on, hoping that he would shoot at it. Well, I was hiding behind a pine tree on my end, hoping it would come out and give me a shot or something. Well, it went down, made some noise at Phil, and then it just sprinted and came out of the palmettos on my end. So I stepped around the palm tree, and it ran straight at me. I mean, it was river to the right, open field to the left, and it ran straight at me. And I was, thinking to myself, is this thing charging me or what? But it got 2 yards away, and I shot it and hit it in the top of the back and actually come out. It didn't, it was an angle, of course, because I'm looking down at the pig, but it went through its back and then out, it didn't hit guts or nothing like that, but come out that area and then cut the pig's back leg. And, the first shot, and the pig kind of fell over to the side. And that's when I kind of got away because I didn't know what the pig was doing.
That was the first shot I heard, the thump of the bug.
Yeah.
And then run back was after the pig was laying there.
The pig got up and it was starting back toward the palmetto. So I shot at it and missed that time. And let's see, I think I knocked another arrow at that point. And I think I shot again. I cannot remember. I think I hit it this shot. Well, it went back in the palmettos. So I knock an arrow, my last arrow. And I go up on top of the, it's a little 4 foot mound or so, but I look and the pig is back in the palmettos and I see it standing there probably 12 yards away.
It wasn't far.
Yeah. And I pulled back and I saw the fletching disappear behind its shoulder that time. And the pig went down, but then I was out of arrows. So I go running out of, Palmetto's in the field. I need Harris. And I don't know why. I mean, Phil has a 27 inch draw and I've got a 29 and a half inch draw. I don't know why I needed his arrows.
Short draw.
Then I started making my way back up to him.
Then I thought to myself, there's arrows everywhere. Just pick one up. So I picked an arrow up and knocked it. And I went back up there and got back on the mound. And I saw the pig was down and wasn't getting back up at that point. But it was fun. It was people had told us, you know, that I've had a lot of people say that they would rather deer hunt than pig hunt. And, you know, I love deer hunting. It's one of my passions in life. But the pig hunting is fun. I have to give it to it. It's a blast. Pig hunting and stick bows are made for each other.
That was my next question. Did this ruin deer hunting for you guys?
Yes.
Well, Mark asked me, he said, now, like, if we went back down there and I was in a deer stand and I heard pigs, what am I going to do? And I'm going to get down and go after the pigs.
Yeah.
It's fun.
I think what it did for me, as far as deer hunting goes, I had kind of got to the point in my deer hunt, especially with my archery and stuff, that I go out there to hunt. I just, if I kill something, I kill something. I'm not looking to mount any more deer. I'm not looking to best anybody's points. And I'm just kind of over all that, you know. I've been through that over the years, and I'm just like, so for me, if you told me you were going to take me on a deer hunt or a pig hunt, at this point, I'd go pig every time. It's just the fact of how that spot and stalk, it's an adrenaline rush. And for me, you know, I didn't kill a pig, but I couldn't have had a better hunt. And for us to be able to do it together, like, I mean, I told Brad, I said, you realize we came down here to 280,000 acres in a place we'd never been, and you killed a pig with a recurve bow. I said, that's a trophy right there, buddy.
Heck yeah.
Anybody's book.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And you get to hang out with all those people in camp every night.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And yeah. That's another part of it. It's just, I mean, we had as much fun doing that as our experiences during the day, just hanging out, talking around the campfire.
Yeah.
Awesome experience.
Lots of stump shooting while we were out looking.
You got to do it, Chris. You got to do it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
I put it on the schedule.
I'm definitely doing it next year. Absolutely.
Brad did leave one little detail out of his story that a conversation him and Mark had later. Oh, yeah.
I got back to the campfire. We were sitting around the campfire that night because we went back out that day after we cleaned the pig. That's one thing at Fort Stewart. They have the facilities are set up for it. The campground is nice. They've got cleaning facilities where you can take the pig, hang it up, water hose, everything like that. So we got all that done. Went back to the camp and I had to change clothes because I was all wet. And we went back out that evening. I will say, I'll say this, I did kind of mess up Phil's hunt that afternoon. Yeah. But we had been hunting. We were driving along and we saw these pigs on the shoulder of the road, or not really the shoulder, they're next to the woods.
Yeah.
And there, you know, if you see pigs, if it's an open unit, you can hunt them. You just have to check in. So Phil is driving and he stops the truck halfway in the road. And I take his phone and I check him. I get him checked in and he grabs his bow out of the back and just gets out of the truck like he's in a trance and starts walking toward these pigs. And I'm not even hiding. You're just walking toward him. I don't know what you're thinking. But he starts going toward him and the pigs, you know, kind of ease off the shoulder, off the like the edge of the woods, ease into the edge of the woods, which is going to be good because they can't see where he's at now. He can get in the woods and get after him. He gets and steps in the edge of the woods. And by this point, I had got in the driver's seat, pulled the truck off the road, parked it, got out, and put the keys in my pocket. And somehow I hit the alarm on his truck. And I have no idea how to cut it off. So
yeah. I'm looking 60 yards back up the road at him. Halfway between me and the truck, and he's like reaching in every pocket on his pants, turned around. The thing is, when he finally gets the keys in his hand, he's hit so many buttons on my key fob, he cuts it off and then cuts it back on. Oranges.
It was a good 15 to 20 seconds of the horn going off. And we never saw the pigs after that. I felt bad about that. I mean, it looked,
oh, God.
It looked bad. But anyway, after that, we go back to camp. And like y'all were saying, one of the best parts of camp is sitting around the campfire at night, just hanging out with everybody. And I was sitting next to Mark, and he was getting a kick out of me chasing the pig into the river and stuff like that. And he's like, you know, there's man-eating size alligators that are in that river, like 10-foot, 12-foot alligators. And I was like, really? It ended up.
Oh, Schaefer, my gosh.
You sent me those coordinates, and that was very close where you jumped that gator to where I'd say it was 100 yards from where I went in the river.
So, Schaefer, you didn't tell me you saw a gator.
Tons of them. They're all over the place. So they texted me. I was texting with Brad that whole time. The whole pig thing happened. So my dad and I were in the area. So we're like, well, we'll go by that area, and if they're still there, we'll help out, see what's going on. And they had left at this point. So we were like, well, we'll do a quick walk. And I'm walking up the we were on the other side of the airfield.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't hunt that big field you guys were talking about. We were farther in, and I'm walking up the edge of the shore, or not the shore, but where the rivers come up into the woods, and like 50 yards in front of me, all suddenly I hear something break into the river. I'm like, ooh, that's like exactly what Brad said happened to him. So I'm thinking pig, right? So I'm sneaking up the edge, and I get to around where I hear that noise, and I just look down in the river because I'm like 2 yards from the river. And I just see the water swirl, and I'm like, well, that's no pig that just did that. So my assumption is a gator had gotten into the water and was floating right there and decided to get out of Dodge when I got too close.
Glad he wasn't.
Yeah, but that-
Oh my gosh, that's a riot.
I can tell you that you will be, Chris, if you go down there, you'll be super cautious about the snake thing. Until you see a pig, and then, something turns off in your brain.
Yeah, the thought process and thinking.
Yeah, you're just like, just like in a whole nother mode somehow. Because even the whole time we were chasing that pig and tracking it, and I'm running up the side of the edge of this woods through these where it was like right in the edge of the woods, and I'm never in my mind thinking I could step on a snake. I'm just going. You know,
right.
And he's jumping in a river, wading out waist deep. And I said, what clicks in a man's head? I said, what were you going to do if you shot it? And it's floating down.
Yeah. Did you guys run into me? Yeah, exactly. Roll with it. You'll figure it out.
Right.
Did you guys run into Foster while you're down there?
We did.
You did.
He was camped across from us.
Because he said he called me and he's like, "What, are you down there?" I'm like, "No." I had to explain to him I wasn't down there. But he was telling me, he's like, "You got to go down in the summer. There's spiders the size of your hand, and the snakes are everywhere." I'm like, "No, I'm good. I don't want anything to do with that."
Yeah.
But he started talking about spiders and stuff, and I was like, "Holy crap, everything down there is nasty."
Yeah, Mark was telling me, you come down there hunting July, and you're going to see the pigs every time you go out. But
yeah.
It's stinking miserable.
Because I mean, there's food, right? Everywhere?
I would assume that's the key.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's miserable hot in the humidity.
Oh, no. The heck?
I don't know, man.
The South and the humidity and the heat in the summer, no thanks.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania's humid enough for me in July. I went down to like South Carolina and Florida in July a couple times, and never again. It's too much for me.
Yeah,
it's different.
But I am all about this hunt next year. We are definitely doing this. I am. It's cheap. Like every time I want to hunt out of state, it's insane. It's so expensive, and I'm kind of. I mean, I don't know. I should just suck it up and pay someday. But I mean, I like cheap. That's an easy sell for me.
See, we've talked about going back down there because, see, we bought the year permit. So we've talked about maybe going back because we could do a we can do a 2-day hunt weekend. I mean, we're 5 hours.
Yeah, it's not bad. Not a bad ride for you guys.
Yeah.
And you guys are in North Carolina, right?
Yeah, Central
North Carolina.
You're just south of Greensboro.
Okay. North Carolina is a nice state, man.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I like North Carolina.
Yeah, it's a good place.
Yeah.
But it was fun. I had debated on what kind of broadhead to use, and you know, you hear so many things about pigs, but
Mark, what did you use?
I used a 3-blade VPA, 200 grain.
Good option.
It
went through like butter, dude.
Yep. I kind of shot when that first shot, it went down through its back. I mean, it was kind of front to back.
Yeah.
All the way through. And then the one when it went back in, I sent one and I saw the fletching disappear behind its shoulder. That one went through and stuck in the ground. So it, and that actually went through the shoulder blade, didn't
it?
What bow were you using? How many pounds? What arrows?
I was using it was a DOS riser.
Okay.
With UCA or UCA.
So it was ILF.
Yeah. Right? It was the DOS fittings on it.
Oh, okay.
But it was 40-pound limbs, 29.5-inch draw. So I'm going to say 40, maybe 44 pounds.
How long is that riser? 17 or 21?
17.
17? Okay.
With the long limbs. But it's a smooth shooting bow.
Oh, yeah.
My widow, like I said, I'd sent the riser from it off to get the grip checkered. So.
Yep. Yeah. UCA limbs are smooth.
Oh yeah,
I had a set. They were light. They were like 38 pounds. I shot I shot bear bow with them, and they were smooth. They were nice. They're nice limbs.
I love a wood bow, but that bow shoots great.
Heck yeah! All bows are good, man.
It's nice.
Some have soles, some don't, but all of them are good.
Yeah. The only downside with that one is you would sink in the river.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, the way I banged it around some of those swamps, I was kind of glad I didn't have my widow with me.
Yeah, right. Right. Oh man, that is cool. That sounds like a good time.
Oh, it's a blast.
Schaefer, you got anything you got to add to that? Any part of your story you want to add to that?
No, that's definitely the story of the weekend.
Yeah, and you guys. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, buddy.
No, I was just going to carry on, so you go for it.
What day was it that you got your pig?
Saturday morning.
Saturday morning. And you guys left Monday or Sunday?
Yeah.
Monday?
Yeah, we saw the pig. I got the pig Saturday morning. Then I scared Phil's pigs away Saturday evening. And then Sunday, we didn't have a lot of luck Sunday. We did a lot of walking on Sunday. But
we got up just before daylight on Sunday. We came back. As we were riding through, we came back by the campground about 3:45, 4 o'clock, grabbed a bologna sandwich, went straight back out, didn't come back till after dark. It was like over 7 miles we walked.
Oh, that's awesome.
We hunted hard Sunday and just didn't see anything else. We found up there where we ran into you and your dad, Schaefer, up there, in between 11 and 12 up there. That place was insane, the amount of sign we found up there.
Yeah. That was one of my favorite areas. I was the whole weekend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like Mark says, though, pig sign don't mean anything unless a pig's standing in it.
Right.
Because we saw a lot of fresh stuff, but it's just.
I sent Newman a picture of some old rooting. He's like, huh, good. You're also good at finding old pig sign.
What's you guys all had to wear orange, right?
Yeah.
I did see that. Was it just a vest?
Yeah. So the first day I was there was Thursday. My dad and I rolled in around 8:39 in the morning, and Mark got there shortly after. So after everybody got camp set up, Mark took like 4 or 5 of us out, and we were kind of looking around areas. That's how he knew about the food plot. And on our way out, he stopped, and there was a game warden there, which is the MPs are also game wardens. And he asked him about orange, and he said, as long as you have a vest. Vest is good. Hat's not quite enough. So
okay,
that was the orange gist that we got from him.
All right, so a vest. Good enough.
And there's archery-only zones. I don't.
Yep.
You don't have to wear orange in those, do you, Schaefer?
I think I would assume you do. I think it's just a base rule. It's not so much.
Gotcha. A state rule, but a base rule.
Yeah.
Because there were guys down there, other people down there pig hunting with guns.
Correct.
So it wasn't just like everybody that was pig hunting on that whole place was hunting with bows. It was just us.
Yeah.
anybody else that we ran across a bunch of guys, probably four or five guys that all had rifles and stuff.
Just the cool people were hunting with.
Yeah, right.
That's right. Yeah, I think Mark told us he hunts with the flintlock there, right? Isn't that where he was hunting with the 32 or 36? 36 caliber. I think it was 36 caliber.
That would be
really yeah, that would be fun too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Schaefer, anything else we need to cover?
This has been an absolute blast.
Oh, my
By
gosh.
Far the hardest I've ever laughed on a podcast, so I appreciate that.
Are you guys going to make it to ETAR this year?
Oh, yeah. We already got our place.
We'll be up on Tuesday.
Yeah, we'll come.
Oh, up. You guys are staying in a place? You're not camping?
No, we usually stay in Wellsboro at a motel.
Great. Yeah, it's a great town.
And I figure the first year that we camp will be a massive downpour every day.
Yeah, of course. That's just
so we
ETAR.
Just stay away from and don't camp. But we found a place that's about 3 miles away that's an Airbnb this year, so we're going to be all a right. whole lot closer.
Did you eat at the diner in Wellsboro?
We were always
the railroad car diner.
Yeah, yeah.
It looked like it was always closed.
It didn't open until like 7, and we were getting it to ETAR to get a good spot at like 6:30 or 7 every day.
Yeah, no, well, we went by the creamery every morning and evening though.
Nice.
Yeah, creamery.
That ice cream was insane at that creamery.
That's a cool town. I don't know if you guys noticed, but all the lights in town are gas.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool. We go to Wellsboro usually in the fall, like when the leaves are changing and everything.
Yeah.
There's the Pennsylvania Grand Canyon's on the far side of town.
Yeah.
And my family and I'll take a little road trip up there, and then we'll always eat at the diner or there's an Italian place. There's also there's a sporting goods town or sporting goods store in that town, and the woman who owns it was in Alone. I think the season that Clay was in it, Hayes was in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think she was in the same season as Clay Hayes. But yeah, she owns the sporting goods store there.
Yeah, it's a cool place.
Cool. Yeah, it is. Destination spot for sure.
Oh, heck yeah.
Man, that was every time we've been there, I mean, it's been like a lot of people there.
Yeah, yeah, it's always packed.
Hotel vacation, and it's a really neat, and it's so clean.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you don't see paper on the grounds anywhere. I mean, they keep that place clean.
That town is nice. It is nice really nice. Place. Yeah. That whole area of Pennsylvania is pretty. It's really nice out there.
It is. Gorgeous.
Well, heck yeah. Guys, this has been awesome. This has been funny.
Absolutely.
And I know I would have been there this year if we weren't going away in April. I would be there this year.
I totally get it, man.
Yeah.
We literally, Chris, drove right by.
I know. Schaefer texted me that like they took a nap in the rest stop, like, I don't know, was it like 8 miles from my house or something? It's probably...
Well, yeah, so, I mean, it was on the way home, and I knew we had passed the Clark Summit sign, and I didn't really pay attention. And next thing you know, we wake up from our quick 1 hour or 2 hour nap in the rest area, and we keep driving. And I'm like, hey, that's the exit I take to go to Chris's. Yeah. I'm like, we literally were probably as the crow flies a few miles from his place.
Probably. Yeah, no, I'll definitely be there next year. I think we're going to skip some stuff and put more hunting trips in the I think we both need to do that. We can
I won't lie, I'm debating ETAR already this year.
ETAR's in the summer.
I had
dude.
Such got... a good time down there that I'm like trying to figure out which weeks I can
I don't know. ETAR's a fun time. That's one ETAR and the sawmill shoot in June. They're so much fun, and that's when, like, you know, all our we have a crew that goes, and it's just so much fun to both those shoots.
Do they have vendors there when they do the sawmill shoot?
No. I mean, like, there might be five. There might be like five different people selling, like, I think, what's the one guy that has a trailer full of arrows?
Well, so
stuff?
The only issue is Stickbow Supply sold.
Stickbow. Oh, did it?
But he sold it. So I don't know if the buyer's going to be at the sawmill.
Yeah. So Stickbow
there used to be like
used to be there.
Enough vendors to get what you needed.
Yeah, so if you needed points or knocks or something, you could get it.
But if that guy doesn't come back, whoever bought it, it's pretty.
They had that. They had that sawmill shoot way before they moved to ETAR there.
Correct. So they had the ETAR shoot out in Denton Hill, and the sawmill shoot was always at Sawmill Ski Resort.
Right. Yeah.
And now they're both there, but the sawmill shoot's cool because, like, it's not as packed. I mean, there's no vendors. But it's just a shoot. It's just and there might I don't know, Schaefer, how
laid
many people
back.
Were less than 1,000 people there last year.
So
I'd say probably 500-600
people. The best way I can describe it for those who have been to ETAR you know where the check-in trailer is, right, for Etar?
Yes.
That check-in trailer is on the other side of the pond right before you go into the woods, to give you an idea. So every single person camped
inside that.
Correct.
Yeah. Nobody's out by the pond. Nobody. I mean, and the big field, when you come in and you hang to the right and there's that big field there that's always jam-packed with people, that might be half full.
I don't even think you can camp there.
Yeah, you can camp there. When you come in and the showers are on your left-hand side and there's the right-hand turn that goes back to that field.
Yeah.
That one. That's what I'm talking about. You can see from, it's not Western. I forget the name of that one.
Badlands.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. That field is not even the capacity. Yeah. So it's nice because you can go, you can shoot all the courses a bunch of times in one day and not have to sit and wait in line.
Yeah. When we go, we get there at 6:30, 7 in the morning. But you get to park down near the ski lodge.
Yep.
And then we stay 12 or 13 hours every day.
Well, let's definitely shoot a course this year.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
At least one.
Yeah.
Hopefully more.
Well, Schaefer, if you have to opt out of Etar for Georgia, man, I'm going to hate it because I was really looking forward to shooting with you at Etar, but I'd get it, dude.
He'll be at Etar. Don't worry.
Yeah. I made day trip because I'm crazy like that.
Like everything else, he says he's not going to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'll make his decision the day before. I'll lay enough guilt on him the week before.
It's 6.5 hours, 7 hours for me down there. And one year for Sawmill, I literally drove down after work Friday, shot Saturday, and drove home Sunday and went to work Monday.
Next year, for Georgia, you and your dad just need to fly down. We'll pick you up and bring you to the campground and, you know, just.
It was funny. So, like, everybody at work was like, holy crap, why are you driving? I'm like, well, you don't see the bed load of stuff we're bringing with us. I know.
Plus,
that's the thing.
I was telling Brad, I'm seriously thinking next year I'm probably going to make even if the PBS thing is like 4 days, I'm probably doing a week out of it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going in early or leaving late or something. I'm doing a week. You could do a week down there easy.
I was about to say, I mean, the walking down there, unlike here, like I did 5 to 6 miles a day, but it's flat. So
it's an easy five to six miles. It's very good. Yeah.
Brad, I didn't even ask you the most important question. How was the pig?
Haven't tried it yet.
I meant to ask you before you went out of town.
Hopefully, my dad's cooking it tomorrow. I had to go to DC the day.
Oh, after that's right.
I got back for 3 days, and I just got back an hour and a half or 2 hours ago. So my dad is hopefully going to cook it tomorrow while I'm working. And
are you doing it on a spit?
He's got like a pig cooker. He's a big barbecue guy.
Yep. And, so he's going to rotate the whole thing, right?
No, it won't be on a spit. I think he's just going to, cause the pig's kind of whole. We skinned it out.
Yeah.
But left it together in the cooler. And I think he may just
put it right on the grill
and just put it right on the grill.
Okay.
Got a big pig cooker grill. So I'm hoping that's what he's going to do.
Awesome. Awesome. Please let us know how it is.
Oh yeah. It's fun. You've got to go. Like Phil said, I want to go for a week next year cause it just give you more time. When we were there, you know, you get kind of frantic because you're like, here, what do you try here or there? It'd be nice to be able to relax a little bit. And, you know,
I was about to say, we only hunted like, I don't even want to say half because, like, there's no way we hunted the eastern half, but like, we never even made it over to the western side of the base.
Oh, right. E's and the F's and stuff like those zones.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing. Anybody planning on going, make sure you got a four-wheel drive because you won't have access to a lot of the areas that we wanted to get to, we couldn't get to. So
good to know.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait. I want to go next year. All right.
There's no want. I'm going.
Oh, man. Guys, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Phil, it was nice meeting you. Brad, it was good to see you again, man.
Good to see you.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well,
look forward to seeing you guys at Etar.
Definitely. We'll definitely shoot some courses together. Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right.
Perfect.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Good night.
Excellent. Real quick before we go, just want to take a moment and thank our partner, Black Widow Bows, along with Addictive Archery, Safari Tough, Great Northern Quivers, and Laurel Mountain Outfitters. Also, if you have a moment, please take the time to leave us a review. It really helps us out. On top of that, I just want to thank everyone for listening. Hope you enjoyed, and best of luck out there.